Ladies and gentlemen, I read this piece on the Daily Beast website by Joel Kotkin, who we've had on the show many, many times. He's an expert on the modern American city and an expert on California in particular. Teaches at Chapman University. And I wanted to have him on to talk about it because it's utterly fascinating. The headline is Why the Greens Lost and Trump Won. And I have been saying for years that I believe that the environment has been elevated into a secular faith for a lot of people. And that this is one of the reasons why you start to see people like Leonardo DiCaprio and other environmentalists who then take private planes to go to events. They get accused of being hypocrites, much the way evangelicals who end up, you know, with male prostitutes and cocaine all over the hotel room are hypocrites, obviously, because they're not walking the walk. They're just talking the talk.
The only true blue is Bernie. He flew coach, man.
Once you elevate the environment to a moral imperative, then you are a sinner if you don't live by the moral code. But there are all kinds of implications to this. And let's talk about it with the Presidential Fellow on Urban Futures at Chapman University, Joel Kotkin. Joel, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Thank you.
I always appreciate you coming on with us. You made a fascinating point in this piece. You know, George Washington did not have children of his own. Martha had five children with her first husband who died. George Washington is believed was sterile. And the theory is that his testicles had been damaged from all that time in the saddle. At least that's the theory. And there are political theorists who believe that the fact that he had no flesh and blood progeny that made it easier for him to not be seduced by hereditary monarchy, that he didn't want to become a king because he had no prince to leave it to. But you talk about, and it's fascinating, how many European leaders and don't have children. Jerry Brown doesn't have any children. So when they talk about leaving our legacy to the next generation, it's theoretical.
Well, it's also, you know, one of the things is, I mean, and I have kids, and I'm sure most people who do have kids have this issue, which is, you know, yes, I want a clean environment, and, you know, I don't want some catastrophic environmental disaster to be there when my kids are in their 40s and 50s, and, you know, I'm not here anymore. But the problem is that I'm also worried about them making a living, owning a house, raising a family. And all those concerns are just taken away. I've been doing a lot of research on medieval thinking, and there's something very medieval here. It's very much, you know, everything is seen through this context. It's good and evil. You can't sit there and say, you know, we can get to a lot of these goals by doing X, Y, and Z. No, it has to be done this particular way. And I think it's a lot of times you're mixing up all sorts of agendas. I mean, Jerry Brown disliked suburbia before global warming was an issue. Many of these people are now using, for instance, global warming to destroy political opponents like the fossil fuel industry, or they're using the environmental issues. So, like as we have in California, we're essentially going to strip away all the zoning power from local communities. So if you like your local community the way it is now, you're not going to be able to keep it.
Well, you know, it seems to me that the assault on fossil fuels in particular, and I assure you, I want a clean environment. I've lived here long enough to see the air get noticeably, really almost remarkably cleaner than it was when I got here 30-some-odd years ago. When we said the air in California used to come in two styles, regular and super chunk, you know. And this was, we pay for it, but it was something that the people of California valued, and they said, we're going to pay more at the gas pump, but we're going to get a benefit from it with cleaner air. But at some point, you have to do cost-benefit analysis. But once it becomes a moral imperative, then one micron of toxicity is unacceptable for the purists, for the zealots, who view mankind as an intrusion on planet Earth rather than part of the ecosystem. They don't see mankind as part of, we're the enemy. You know, that's the old line from the first Earth Day cartoon in Pogo by Walt Kelly. We have met the enemy and he is us. But they've taken it to the point where this would be a hell of a planet if it wasn't for the people who live here.
Right. Well, and of course, there's a there's a category of people there who are looking at these issues and saying, there are different groups, you know, there are bureaucracy who, now you're letting some 30-year-old graduate of a planning school to determine, who, you know, what the shape of your community is. Or you're going to have a developer who is going to say, oh, look, I'm, let's say, in the Bay Area. They're now proposing, because the Bay Area is actually crazier than we are. The Bay Area now is going to propose essentially a plan where almost all new housing will be apartments, it will be rentals, it will all have to take place on about 5% of the land mass. And of course, but if I'm a developer, I'm saying this is great. If I own property in that 5%, it's going to be worth a fortune. So there's a lot of economics going on here. I mean, you take a company like all of Elon Musk's operations. I mean, look, I admire a lot of his ambitions, and I think, you know, he's an interesting character. But, you know, without public subsidies based on, you know, sort of green ideology, that company wouldn't exist. And so there are economic interests, there are bureaucratic interests, and there's kind of, again, the, I think very much a religious interest in that. I think as we move away from traditional senses of religion, people need some sort of lodestone, some sort of thing to say, this is good, this is bad. And one of the things that they do is they use the environment, and then they use their rubric. So part of what I was trying to suggest is the big reason we've reduced our greenhouse gases in the United States is the shift to natural gas. And at one time, many Greens said, "Okay, you know, that's, you know, replace coal with natural gas. That's a good thing." That's not good enough anymore. So, you know, or nuclear power. That in many countries like in France, that reduces GHG. Oh, we don't like nuclear power. So, you know, essentially, what you're doing is you're creating a ideology which really boils down to don't have kids and live poor.
We're talking with Joel Kotkin. The piece is called Why the Greens Lost and Trump Won. It's on the Daily Beast, thedailybeast.com. Of course, Joel's written a number of books that are all required reading as far as I'm concerned. The consequences of this are profound. We hear a lot of talk in L.A. and in Sacramento now about the housing crisis in California. Of course, the cost of housing in California is astonishingly high and heading higher, and it's heading higher largely because of this, because of bureaucrats who have made it almost, you need a papal dispensation to put a shovel in the ground.
Well, and then their new solution is, okay, the way we're going to deal with this is we're going to have high density housing. That's the only housing basically you can build. Well, you know, here's the bottom line. Most people after the age of 30 don't want to live in high-density housing. If they want to have a family, they definitely don't want high-density housing. Yes, there are some who do, but not very many. And you have to be very wealthy to be able to afford a large enough place where you could raise a family. So, you know, fundamentally, by changing the way our communities look and by refusing to allow us to build new and very sustainable developments, I mean, if we could build more Irvines and Valencias out in the Inland Empire, I think that would be one way of relieving the stress. And instead, what we're doing is we're doing everything we can to increase the price of housing by restricting what gets built. Again, I keep trying to tell these people, a apartment complex is not a substitute for a single family house. There are different markets, different people. And so what we're seeing in migration is that people basically making between 100 and 200,000 a year between the ages of 35 and 54 are moving out. And the biggest reason seems to be because they can't afford to buy a house.
You know, my feeling on this is all of this activity, including the road diet, which we will be covering live tomorrow down to Mar Vista as we broadcast live from the Venice Grind Coffee Shop. All of this kind of social engineering, we're going to get more crowded than we are now. We're already crowded. And if we're going to build more Valencias and we're going to build more Irvines to deal with the housing crisis, the first thing we need to do is to provide people a way to get from those places to their jobs and back.
Right.
And the investment in transportation should be the top priority because everything should build off of that.
Right.
But we're doing it backwards. We're the high density apartment construction, they want to take parking spots away. Now there's an attack on parking lots that by building parking lots and requiring developers to have parking for the people who live in their buildings or shop in their plazas, that they're encouraging people to drive so that we should have a parking lot diet as well. This is madness. You keep building infrastructure, but squeezing the car out when people don't have a viable option to take public transportation. It's crazy.
Well, we have a report coming out on transit because it's not unique to L.A. A lot of the sort of cities that grew after 1950 have tried things like light rail. They failed almost everywhere. $16 billion spent, and the share of people taking transit is less than it was in 1990. I mean, fundamentally, we have to come up with new, innovative solutions. And one of them, the reason I mentioned Irvine and Valencia, is that those places also are job centers. So you've got to let people, you've got to disperse employment so that people don't have to live in place A and commute to place B. I mean, if you live in the Inland Empire and you've got to come in to Costa Mesa or you've got to come in to West L.A., there's no way you can do that without wanting to tear your hair out.
Well, Joel, as always, we thank you for coming on and talking about it. It's a great read. Go see it at the Daily Beast, thedailybeast.com. Thanks for being with us this morning.
My pleasure.